more than just to lie about someone. That's how we tend to use the English word slander. But kata laleo means, well, King James says, speak not evil one of another, brethren. Kata laleo means to speak against someone. Kata means against, laleo means to speak. It means to talk them down. It means to speak ill of them, to disdain someone, to run somebody down verbally. One scholar says it's not necessarily a false report, it's just an against report. The intent is to belittle another, to pour out contempt, to mock, to hurt, to harm, to destroy, to rejoice in purported evil. That sounds a lot like gossip, doesn't it? The word katalaleo appears right next to the chief Greek word for gossip in both New Testament lists where gossip is said to be really bad. Romans 1:30 and 2 Corinthians 12:20. It's always right next door to the word that really means gossip, or the word that only means gossip. It seems to me that katalaleo is the larger category of evil speaking against someone, sometimes taking secretive forms. And then gossip itself is a subcategory that always refers to doing kata laleo behind someone's back. So do you see the gossiping here? Brothers, James says, do not slander, run down, disdain, sinfully gossip about one another. Why? Anyone who speaks against, now that's the same Greek word, kata laleo. It's not obvious in your NIV, but that slander and then that speak against are that same katalaleo word. Anyone who speaks against his brother or what? Judges him. Speaks against the law and judges it. So you see the connection? When you speak against someone like this and run them down, James says that you are judging them. And he means sinful judgment. Because not all judging is sinful. We have to make judgments all of the time. We have to make decisions about other people. We have to make assessments. The Bible calls for us to be discerning people, right? People with what we call good judgment. One author says, judging is necessary, but dangerous. So there's a kind of judging that we have to engage in. We have to. But there's also a sinful kind of judging too, and it leads to sinful gossip. It's the kind of judging that Jesus means when he says, do not judge or you too will be judged. It's the kind of judging that we would call judgmental. And I like that because that mental reminds you of the mind, and it's mostly an attitude. It's a heart disposition to be condemnatory, to be censorious. That's the old word for it. Censorious, to be judgmental. Now, where do we go wrong with judging? Let me suggest three interrelated ways. Rush to judgment, pride in judgment, lack of love in judgment. That's our outline for this morning. Rush to judgment, pride in judgment, lack of love in judgment. We'll take them one at a time. First, rush to judgment. Have you ever formed a conclusion before you had all the facts? I know you have. Ken Sandy, in his excellent article, Judging Others, tells this story. Listen in. I knew he was too proud to take criticism, thought Anne, and now I have the proof. On the previous Sunday, Anne had dropped a prayer card in the offering plate, asking her pastor to stop in and pray with her when she went to the hospital for some minor surgery. When he failed to come by, she called the church secretary and learned that her pastor had already been to the hospital that day to see another church member. So he has no excuse, she thought. He was in the building and knew I needed his support, but still he ignored me. He's resented me ever since I told him his sermons lack practical application. Now he's getting back at me by ignoring my spiritual needs, and he calls himself a shepherd. After brooding over his rejection for 3 days, Anne sat down Saturday evening and wrote a letter confronting her pastor about his pride, defensiveness, and hypocrisy. As she sealed the envelope, she could not help thinking about the conviction he would feel when he opened his mail. The moment she walked into church the next morning, one of the deacons hurried over to her. Anne, I need to apologize to you. When I took the prayer cards out of the offering plates last week, I accidentally left your card with some pledge cards. I didn't notice my mistake until last night when I was totaling the pledges. I'm so sorry I didn't get your request to the pastor. Before Anne could reply to the deacon, her pastor approached her with a warm smile. "Anne, I was thinking about your comment about practical application as I finished my sermon yesterday. I hope you noticed the difference in today's message." Anne was speechless. All she could think about was the letter she had just dropped in a mailbox 3 blocks from church. I like that story. Not because the pastor's the good guy in the story, but because I see myself in Anne. How many times have I rushed to judgment before getting all of the facts? Proverbs 18:13 says, "He who answers before listening, that is his folly and his shame." That's making a judgment before getting all the facts. Proverbs says that's folly and shame. Those are strong words, aren't they? It's important for us as believers to not jump to conclusions. Here's some ways we can do that. Number one, listening to only one side. Right? Listening to only one side. A lot of gossip is just passing on one side of a story. I got a note from a pastor out west about a gossip situation in their church. Someone got up and gave a prayer request for a young lady in their community. They said that this young lady had been kicked out of her home by her parents. She then moved in with her boyfriend in desperation, and everybody started praying for her. But that wasn't all there was to the story. Proverbs 18:17 says, "The first to present his case seems right, till another comes forward and questions him." But you say, "Well, I can't wait until I've talked with everyone to make a judgment." Actually, often we can. We can suspend judgment until we have more of the facts. And if we don't get more of the facts, unless we are related to the problem, closely connected to the people, most of the time we can just live without knowing something. Now I say that as an information addict. But we can live without knowing some things. And in the meantime, we can suspend judgment. And certainly not pass those judgments on. In this case, the truth was that this young lady had left because she wanted to live with her boyfriend. And her father had no legal recourse since she is of age. Her dad badly wants his daughter back and is deeply grieved by the circumstances. She's a senior in high school. The pastor wrote to me, "The well-meaning lady who asked for prayer was deceived by her daughter-in-law, who helped this 18-year-old leave and covered her reputation by inventing this outrageous lie. The members of our church spread the story before I knew enough to debunk it, and right now dozens, perhaps hundreds of people have the wrong idea about the father in question, a local leader well known previously for integrity. Of course, the false allegation has hurt him badly, and recovery, if possible, remains a long way off. The church people were told by me and the lady that the story was false, but the damage is already done. The fire started and cannot be put out. The young lady in question is now caught by the same lie, and her path to return home is now that much more difficult." Proverbs 18:17 again says, "The first to present his case seems right, till another comes forward and questions him." Get both sides. Number two, here's another way. Not considering the source before you jump to a judgment. Not considering the source before you jump to a judgment. Hearsay and secondhand information should be treated with the utmost of carefulness. Filling in the gaps in the information through guesswork and speculation will get you into trouble really fast. Questionable sources of information should be treated like hot uranium. Let me say something about the internet. Just because something is on the internet doesn't mean that it's true. Now, I think that should be obvious to say, but how many times have well-meaning people believed something they've read in a forwarded email and then passed it on? Proverbs 14:15 says, "A simple man," read a gullible man, "believes anything, but a prudent man gives thought to his steps." Don't believe everything you hear. Consider the source. Number three, here's another rush to judgment factor. Assuming you know someone's motives. Assuming you know someone's motives. You don't. Unless they tell you, or it's become obvious through a pattern of incontrovertible facts that can lead to no other reasonable conclusion, we can't read motives. I just read an excellent book on judging by a guy named Dave Swavely. It's called, Now, this title should sound familiar to you from verse 12. Who are you to judge? The dangers of judging and legalism. It's an excellent little book. One of the best books I've read in the last year. And Swavely says, arguing from 1 Corinthians 4, that most sinful judging is judging someone's motives or going beyond what is written in Scripture. See, God sees the heart, but you and I don't. So it's especially important in gossip situations to not assign a bad motive to someone if we can assign a possible good one. Now, that doesn't mean that we put our head in the sand and pretend that we're ostriches. We call sin, sin. But we hold out hope for people and we don't assume the worst about them. That's what sinful judging is at heart. It's assuming the worst about people. And if anyone could do that, it would be us, right, as Christians? Because we have the doctrine of sin. We know that people often have bad motives and do bad things. But we're called to hold out hope for people and to not assign bad motives to them until we have to. That's a rush to judgment. The answer to a rush to judgment is to slow down. To slow down. Slow to reach your judgment, and even slower to share it with anybody. Keep it to yourself. Now, if you and I did that, how much gossip would that cut out? If you and your coworkers did that, how much gossip would that eliminate? In your family? In your neighborhood? Here's a second one. Pride in judgment. This is where James really comes down. Look down at verse 11 again. Brothers, do not slander one another. Anyone who speaks against his brother or judges him speaks against the law and judges it. When you judge the law, you're not keeping it, but sitting in judgment on it. There's only one lawgiver and judge, the one who is able to save and destroy. But you, who are you to judge your neighbor? He's talking about pride, isn't he? When we judge our neighbors in a judgmental way, we are full of self-righteousness and self-exaltation. We are prideful. I can't believe they did that. In fact, James says, not only are we prideful, he says that we're playing God. When you judge someone in this way, James says you are judging the law, God's law. Not keeping it, but sitting in judgment on it. In the context of James, that law is the law of love. It's the law of mercy that God calls His people to obey. But when you and I judge someone like this, we are saying we are above the law, that it doesn't apply to us, and that we can judge it. But that's not the way it works. Pastor James says, there's only one lawgiver and judge, the one who is able to save and to destroy. And guess what? He's not you. You, who are you to judge your neighbor? We need to ask ourselves the question, is this my place? Is it my place to say anything, to think anything, to have an opinion about that? Certainly there are positions where we even have to serve as a judge, small j. Judges do, for example. They have to serve as judges. Parents do at times. They have to make an adjudication. Elders and pastors and even the whole congregations in the case of church discipline, have to make a judgment, small j. But in those cases, we serve as judges. We serve the people we're called to. We don't play God and make up our own standard. And we don't pretend that we'd never do it ourselves. That's the worst kind of judgmentalism, isn't it? Acting like we've never done anything wrong, anything foolish, anything shameful, anything worthy of condemnation. No, it's them that's bad. I'm good. We don't say that, but that's how we're acting. As if. Remember, God knows. That's why Jesus says that we need to apply the same standard to us as to those we're tempted to judge. Because God will. Matthew 7, 1 through 5. Do not judge, or you too will be judged. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when all the time there's a plank in your own eye? I love Jesus' image there. I get this idea of this telephone pole just sticking out of the guy's eye and saying, here, let me get that speck. You know, everybody's dodging because this telephone pole is swinging all around. You hypocrite, first take the plank out of your own eye and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. What's your part in this? Are you objective? With a rush to judgment, we act as if we're omniscient, which we aren't. With pride in judgment, we act as if we're perfectly objective, which we aren't. How often do the Republicans judge what's wrong with the Democrats, but give the other Republicans a pass with what's wrong with them? And vice versa. Democrats finding fault with the Republicans over anything. They can't do anything right, but they don't criticize their own Democrats. That's pride. That's picking and choosing and not being objective based on your own self-exaltation. And we all do it. We're all prone to it. Here's where Jesus' golden rule of thumb is so golden. Do to others as you would have them do to you. It's so simple. It's so profound. We know it. But we got to put it to work. How would you have others judge you? By what standard? With what tone? With what attitude would you want to be judged with? That's the standard and tone and attitude to take with other people. And it should inform the way you talk about them when they aren't there. Heather's aunt sent me this little story. I don't know if it's a true story, but it's a good one. A young couple moved into a new neighborhood. The next morning while they were eating breakfast, the young woman saw her neighbor hanging the wash outside. That laundry's not very clean, she said. She doesn't know how to wash correctly. Perhaps she needs better laundry soap. Her husband looked on but remained silent. Every time her neighbor would hang her wash to dry, the young woman would make the same comments. About 1 month later, the woman was surprised to see a nice clean wash on the line and said to her husband, "Look! She's learned how to wash correctly. I wonder who taught her this." The husband said, "I got up early this morning and cleaned our windows." And so it is with life. What we see when watching others depends on the window through which we look. The answer to pride and judgments is humility. Humble yourselves before the Lord, and He will lift you up. Look at verse 10. It's the one right before verse 11 where we started. Humble yourselves before the Lord, and He will lift you up. That's our powerful promise for today. Humble yourselves before the Lord, and He will lift you up. Judge your judgments. Check your motives. Remember, nobody died and made you God. There's only one God, and you aren't Him. Humble yourself before Him and show others mercy and love, and He will lift you up. Here's the last one. Lack of love and judgment. We've already touched on it. But the reason why we fall into sinful judgments is because we lack love for others. If you love someone with a biblical love, a 1 Corinthians 13 kind of love, then you won't sinfully judge them and you won't gossip about them. Do you remember when we learned 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 8 as a church family a couple years ago? Love is patient, love is kind, it does not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud, it is not rude, it's not self-seeking, it's not easily angered, it keeps no record of wrongs. You see how anti-gossip love is? The next phrase says, love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. Love doesn't sinfully judge someone and then delight to spread that evil around. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes. It's always thinking the best. It's always assuming the best. It's always providing a charitable judgment. Unless when you can't. You just can't because of the facts. Always perseveres. Love never fails. Love doesn't scorn people and tear them down. That's how God loved us, isn't it? We shouldn't play God, but we should act like Him. We should have mercy on people and love our neighbors as we love ourselves. Love them. If we just love people, we won't be caught up in sinful judgments that leads to sinful gossip. Jesus lived 1 Corinthians 13 out for you and for me. He didn't rush to judgment, even though He's omniscient. He was patient with us, long-suffering. He humbled Himself, even though He wasn't prideful. He became one of us, and then died for us as one of us. He never gossiped, but out of love, He paid the penalty for gossip. For the wages of gossip is death. The Bible says that those who gossip deserve death. We read that in Romans 1, 2 weeks ago. But Jesus died for us so that we don't have to perish, but can have eternal life.